2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of the 90th Percentile. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me is my co-host, as always, Matt Pajak of Loden Sports. Matt, no guests today, man. We're having a conversation between the two of us. If you haven't listened to the Exposure Funnel, the three-part Exposure Funnel podcast, go back and check those out after you listen to this episode. I think it was some of the best work that we've done on this podcast. It was some of my favorite episodes, particularly the conversation with your friend Matt Pierce from Sliders Baseball. I thought that was a great conversation, really got into some nitty-gritty details and had some, you know, some conversations in greater detail around youth development, youth baseball, and all that sort of thing. So, Matt, man, how's it going? That was my incredibly long, like, one-minute intro.
I got to do a mic check. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
All right. Sorry. That whole time we were talking before we went live, I'm talking in front of this mic, and it's not even plugged in.
Well, your computer was picking it up, man, you know?
Well, I will say I got to give my computer credit, and I also have, you know, a relatively, you know, quiet situation here, so I don't have to really worry about things. But anyway, I just want to make sure that I wasn't going to start talking and have a mic situation here. Yeah, I mean, Exposure Funnel, good stuff, and we got more coming down the pike. Might have a current big leaguer talking about it on our next episode. So
you're right.
Yes. Stay tuned for that. But no, I mean, Jeff, other than rubbing vinegar on my dog because he's anxious and I don't want him to give himself bald spots, I'm doing what? Great.
That's a thing?
Oh, yeah. He's got a bald spot on his side.
You rub vinegar on it?
I figured out where it came from. And then I saw him licking it yesterday. And I'm like, did he lick himself bald there because of his anxiety? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, that happens. You got to figure it out, man. Get some. You got to get some doggy CBD treats or something. I don't know.
He doesn't like them.
You've given him those. That always bugs me out. I'm like, really? CBD for dogs, huh? All right. Okay. You know?
We tried something that was like a little bit like lower power, and then we tried, you know, like an actual CBD treat, and he didn't want the actual CBD treat. And I'm not even sure the lower power thing did anything. I think he's like, I mean, he's a rescue, right? So
sure.
He's got traumas that we'll never know, and he probably isn't able to escape from in his head. But let me just tell you, if I'm not within eyesight, like it's a panic for him. Anyway,
you got separation anxiety, you know?
Yeah. Love him to death.
You're like a mom with a little baby. Look at you, Matt. Daddy Matt Pajak, dog daddy. He's the dog daddy.
That's my dog. That's my dog.
All right, we're filling this up with dog talk. Any sandwiches this week? You partake in anything? I saw you eat something at Pierce's place that looked fairly tasty.
Oh, yeah. He made the dinosaur beef rib. That thing was huge. I didn't realize how big it was until after. So he smoked queso. Oh, so nice. I want to shout out HEB food markets. That's like the big food market down in Houston, greater Houston area.
Yeah.
It's like their grocery stores. They go there and like all the food is locally sourced.
That's pretty great.
Yeah. I actually, you know what? I had a pretty good sandwich down there, and it was a recommendation of Pierce's wife. It was like a club sandwich, but it was like turkey was smoked, thick cut, good bacon. It was at a old market in Katy. Anyway. Good eats anytime you're down in Houston hanging out with Pierce, that's for sure.
Yeah, not too bad out there in Katy, Texas, getting yourself some good stuff.
And then this past weekend, Farmer Remy shot down a pheasant in South Dakota, brought it back, was like, hey, anybody want a pheasant? I've never cooked pheasant. I was like, yeah, I'll take a pheasant. So I roasted one of those guys on Saturday night, and that came out pretty good. So
yeah, did you like it? It's good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do it all the time, but like, you know, once in a blue moon for sure.
Wonder if Mason Wynn knows about this sandwich. He's a Katy native, isn't he?
He is that where he's from?
I believe he is a Katy, Texas native. I cover the Cardinals, and he is their top rated prospect. So I know a bit about old Mason Wynn. I don't know if he grew up there or not. I think he went to high school in Kingwood, but I believe he was born in Katy, Texas.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I knew he was Houston area. I didn't know where specifically. Let's see. Katy, I'm going to pull out this name here. That way everyone has it for when they're in Katy, Texas.
This is the sandwich place?
Yeah. This
While
is
you look that up, let me mention, I was at the Patriots game this week. I got some tickets from Matt via his family. Thank you very much. Took my youngest to his first NFL game. He had a blast. He made a terrible decision. He's gone from being a Chiefs fan to, after going to a Patriots game in which they lost, he is now a diehard Patriots fan. And on the way to school today, was like, "Dad, when do the Pats play again?" And I was like, "Oh man, this kid, it's like he's gonna have the same trauma I had." And he's not gonna get a Brady. Like, he's not gonna get that. So his Hugh Millen period is gonna be a lot longer than my Hugh Millen period. He may not even have a blood cell. I don't know.
He's not even gonna have a blood cell. It, but that's ignition right there. Ignited.
Yeah, there you go. So I have somebody that's gonna be obsessed, because that's the one team where I'm like a fan. Right, baseball, I like the game. You know, basketball, I like the Celtics, but I'm not like crazy. Same thing with hockey. I'm more of a college hockey fan than an NHL guy, but I do cheer for the Bruins. But like the Patriots, I haven't missed a game. I missed one game in 20 years, and it was in 2006. I want to say it was around this time, maybe like November 15th or 16th. They played the Packers, and I was coming back from a wedding in the Dominican Republic, and I didn't get a chance to watch that game. That's the one Patriots game that I think I've missed since 2000. I missed a few in 2000 because I went away to school, but after that, man, it's been pretty much every game.
I think I've missed a few more than you, but rarely will I miss a game. I'm not missing a game by my decision.
No.
And yeah, I'm with you. Like, it's Bruins over Celtics for me, but I really don't pay attention to either of them whole lot until the spring. I feel like the NBA and the NHL seasons for a sport that I'm not really super dialed into are just too long. But
tournament, people, not, you know. I know I'm the only person in America that apparently likes the NBA in-season tournament, but
yeah, we're going to save that.
I watched all those games. I watched every single in-season tournament game on Friday. I watched them live. I then went back and watched them the next day. And then I'll watch all the in-season tournament games tonight. I have an NBA ticket because my youngest loves basketball. So I watch a lot of NBA, frankly. And like, the beginning of the NBA season is tough. At least this gives me something to tune into that's kind of interesting. Like, who's going to go to Vegas? And there's like this 4-day single elimination playoff. Like, I don't know. I mean, I grew up in a house. My father is Portuguese and Brazilian. He's very into soccer, so I'm very used to in-season cup tournaments during the regular season. It's not foreign to me whatsoever.
I just don't like the idea of dangling a carrot like, "Hey, let's go to Vegas." You know, Vegas, I don't like when Vegas is the epicenter of sports. I've got a problem with that. That's a different topic that I could go for a long time on, and we're not going to do that. Midway Food Market in Katy.
Okay, there you go. That's the name. Midway. Yeah, I don't know. We'll talk about, maybe we'll discuss the Vegas thing another time. I tend to be less, I'm not a gambler, but I just don't, it doesn't bother me one way or another. So
my wife is very bothered that they got the Raiders. She's very bothered that they're getting the A's. She's like, Vegas doesn't deserve it. She's really bothered about the Golden Knights.
Is she I think your wife was from North Carolina.
She is. She's bothered by the fact that like the Golden Knights are an expansion team that were immediately like one of the best teams in the NHL, and they've already won a Stanley Cup. Makes sense. That makes sense to me.
Hey, I'm from the Northeast, so I get angry when anybody in a warm climate wins a Stanley Cup. So I got to be honest, I'm full on curmudgeon. I don't even like the Carolina Panthers. They should still be the Hartford Whalers. That's my most offensive opinion. But we're not talking about this today, man. We're talking about something I brought up to you. Typically, you have the great ideas, and I fill in the blanks. Today, my idea is okay. I don't know. I don't know if it's great or not, but it's something
on the other foot.
Yeah, it's something. The croc, the Chewbacca croc, is on the other foot. I got a pair of Chewbacca crocs this week and showed them off to Matt. So It's going to consistently come up in the show for the next several months. That being said, a topic that I feel like gets discussed all the time, and I feel like it lacks a lot of context in the public space, and that is what I'm calling the imaginary war of scouting versus analytics, the battle between scouting and analytics.
Yeah, Jeff, I'm going to be completely honest with you. Sure. When you sent me this, I thought you were sending me the script for the next Avengers film.
Not an Avengers guy, but it would be pretty good, right?
I'm pretty sure they've got a movie called The Imaginary War. I think it's actually Infinity War, but it's close
enough. Infinity War. Play on that, you know? Yeah, I'm into alliteration. What can I say? You know, the repetition of those initial consonant sounds. It gets me every time, Matt. So let's talk about it a little bit up front, right? I think that there has been a tremendous discussion, particularly on Twitter and in the public space, of like, scouts do this well and analytics, you can do this. And like, you know, scouts are meaningless and analytics is phasing them out. And then there's sort of the opposite reaction of like these nerds that never played baseball and they don't understand anything and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And there's just this, a lot of like back and forth and battling. And I just personally, I'm somebody who tries to sit in the middle a little bit. I'm fascinated by improving myself as in a traditional, you know, at the park scouting way. I'm always challenging myself to do more with numbers, to learn how to do things. I mean, last week for, you know, that article I put out with the StatCast rankings for hitters for all 30 systems, you know, I figured out how to use pivot tables more effectively than I had previously. I jumped into ChatGPT and use some of that to, you know, refine some of the things that I was doing. And I'm somebody that, you know, I go to 90 to 100 baseball games a year. I'm always at the park from pretty much February through September. And, you know, talk to a lot of scouts. I talk to a lot of analysts. I do a lot of number stuff. So for me, like, I feel like I sit in the middle of the two worlds and I see the benefits of each. And, you know, I want to just sort of define what I think those are. Matt, I don't know if you have anything you want to chime in here before I keep going. I know I'm talking a lot.
No, I really enjoy this conversation. I've got some fun stuff to add in here when my time comes.
Mm. Well, I think like when you look at traditional scouting, in-person looks, I think that seeing players, and it was funny, the Patriots game the other day gave me a great example of this because you have two big TV screens at both ends. And then good seats right at the 20-yard line. I can see the play. And for me, the difference between the reality of what's in front of you versus what's on TV, even there, like it's a stark difference in terms of just what you see, the full picture, how things move, how guys look. I think a big part of it is, as lame as it is it's the off the bus test as well. What does the guy look like? How does he move? Sometimes stuff like that on TV, there's some optical illusions. And I don't know, I'm not smart enough to explain it, but I know that there are times that I've gone back and watched tape that I've shot and other people have shot of similar plays that I've seen in person and noticed how different things can look, right? And there's always a variety of angles, et cetera. Going a little bit further, the goal of traditional scouting, identify skills or tools and traits, you know, that you think can project for growth. So you're not just looking at the player now, you're looking at the player and, you know, going back into your historical Rolodex of information that you've acquired over years of watching games and saying, all right, what does this guy do? What are these traits that, you know, could portend? If you're a really good scout, you're somebody that understands some of these traits at a much deeper level than I do and are able to say, okay, he's doing this. This is something that can easily be fixed by doing this, right? And I just think, you know, generally you gain perspective beyond the numbers, right? You can put numbers out there just flatly and not necessarily understand, oh, this guy hit 25 home runs with a 102 90th percentile exit velocity. You know, okay, maybe he's got great bat angle, something like that. That's what you look for analytics. You don't have the numbers, the distance of home runs or the dimensions of the park that he played in or whatever, even the guys that he's facing. You don't necessarily have the context for the quality of those home runs in the minor leagues. And obviously the majority of pitchers you're facing in the minor leagues are never going to see the majors. A lot of them aren't really legitimate prospects. And there are some parks with really funky dimensions. There are parks, you know, like Everett in Washington. I believe that's the high affiliate in the Northwest League for the Seattle Mariners. I think it's like 367 to dead center. So does that, you know, you think about that and it's like, then you start to think about some of the players there. Does that change your perspective on Harry Ford's power or Tyler Locklear's high-end power? Maybe it doesn't, but I think when you see it, you can put that into context as opposed to just looking at the numbers. There's certainly ways if you have enough analytics to dive into that. But when we're looking at from a scouting perspective, we're talking more about prospects. There is a limited data set that's available publicly. Anything else you want to chime in on scouts before I kind of run down on the positives of analytics?
Yeah, I think just opening statement here. I think in the public space, there's a lot of like back and forth about like analytics versus traditional scouting, this, that, whatever. I think in the non-public space, meaning the 30 clubs, like there's a general agreement amongst clubs that do it well on the evaluation side that it is a marriage of both. You need both.
Yes.
You can't operate with one and not the other. And both of them are equally important. Both of them play into the model in some degree. And yeah, I'll get into it later on. You know, a lot of the context that can be provided by having a human being surrounding the evaluation process as opposed to just looking at numbers. Also, just throwing this out there, I'm a huge fan of, and these environments are shriveling up, you know, the more we advance in technology and everything becomes more accessible, of places where you don't have perfect information, because that's that, like, you know, in the eyes of an that's where like an evaluator can really go in and like show their worth or compete. Like evaluators want to compete.
Yeah.
They want to compete with the guy next to him. If you're going and you're watching SEC baseball, like, okay, you all got the same information. You've all seen these players a million times. Like, there's not a whole lot to compete on there, but like international scouting's always been great from that component where it's, you know, there isn't perfect information. So like, there are international departments that crush it, and there's international departments that are still trying to figure out what their process is. Or like a lot of times it's just throwing, you know, blind darts at the board and seeing what hits the bullseye. Here in the States, like the high school environment for the elite player is starting to become a little bit like perfect information. Not quite to the level of high level Division I baseball, but yeah, you know, Jeff, I know that you dive into the numbers a lot, but it's kind of nice when it's like, there's no numbers on this guy. What do we do? And you look at it a lot more from the pro side as opposed to the amateur side. So
yeah, and I do a lot of college stuff in terms of playing with data and stuff like in season in the background, and certainly have strong opinions based on in-person looks from the Cape as well. But, and I think that kind of segues nicely. So like when I got into analytics, it was actually because of being behind home plate at the park. At the time, Peter Flaherty, who's now with Baseball America, was with Kituit and the Cape Cod Baseball League. He was probably 19 years old. And 2019, I'm sitting behind home plate. The TrackMan's right here. I know what velocity is, and I know what the spin rates are. I don't know what tilt is. I don't know what vertical is. I don't know what horizontal is or any of these other things, release height, these different things. You know, I had a basic idea of extension, but had no idea of how it all worked together and like what was coming out. So the thing that I did over that off season, and then 2020 happened in the pandemic, I really studied up on advanced data. And, you know, I had help from some folks that work within that world, kind of drilling me on stuff and explaining things as I got things wrong. And I learned a lot from it. And now I can go there and I can understand a lot of what comes off of that device, which is great because in real time, this is very much my process. And this is what I want to get into, is the data allows me to be honest with myself, and it's allows me to be accountable with myself on certain things, right? But also, if there's times where I challenge the data, I have a really good reason for why I challenge it, because I understand the things that can happen that can make it imperfect, we'll say, right? we say that the prep data is perfect or the college data is perfect, but it's not. It's not a great like-to-like comparison between pro ball and particularly college, where guys are using metal bats. We know that there's been a lot of rumors about bat tampering and things of that nature. So a lot of the EVs, there was a significant rise this year in high-end EVs in college and has been for a few years. Now, that could be the technology. It could be the ball. And I'll go a step further. The ball in college, the seam separation and height is different than it is in pro ball. And there's some difficulty there. You'll see a guy like Carlson Reed, who had a great slider at West Virginia and on the Cape. He comes into pro ball and the seams are different. The ball doesn't move the same way that it did before. It doesn't happen with everybody. Most guys, I would say that it does translate. But, you know, I think that it's a little bit of a give and take. And I think that, like, the scouting thing, the watching the games, the understanding it in greater detail allows you to be a better analyst. And I've seen that with guys internally, the guys that I've known that have gone in and worked in analytics departments, or guys that I know have been successful scouts. You know, the scouts will do what I do, where they sort of, you know, keep themselves accountable or check against what the data saying or what the model saying, depending upon what particular team. There's one particular team, and I have a contact I chat with, where he puts in the scouting reports after sitting on a series, and then he gets to see at that point what the model says. And then the model sort of offsets based on his report. So if he has a higher grade than the model, then the number in the model might bump up a little bit, and vice versa. And there's a lot of advanced teams who have had a lot of success over the last couple of years who have a similar process. And I think we see it with a team like the Dodgers or the Mariners or the Rays. They've all done a really good job of not only having analytics and player development and understanding the numbers, but also having robust scouting departments of really good scouts. And I think, like, you see that particularly with the Dodgers. It's a big scouting department, and they kind of run the gamut in terms of personalities and ages and philosophies on the game. And I think that that's the thing that gets missed in the public discussion the most often, is these aren't black and white questions. There's a spectrum of colors and perspectives here that color everything in. And I think, you know, my biggest thing when I'm talking about this issue is, you know, it's the old expression, it came from Jay Live, a rapper I used to listen to back in 2000, New York guy, pretty good.
Papoose,
a little different than Papoose, but he had a line, and I don't think it's original to him, but he's like, you know, if you have one target, aren't you better off with two darts? And I kind of look at it like that. It's like, if I'm trying to get the most robust understanding of who this player is, what his capabilities are, what his limitations are, what he potentially has left in projection, I have to look at both. I have to understand both as well as I possibly can before I go in and I write that scouting report. And I'm in the midst of doing this right now for the next month and a half, writing, you know, 120 scouting reports. So for me, it's like, I put all that together and it's very easy to then write. I can write the report in 20 minutes, but the research might take an hour and 10 minutes. You know, like, with each one, it's more digging in, understanding, watching the tape, talking to people, like doing all those sort of things that you have to do to really get a great understanding of, you know, the player and who he is and what he can and can't do. I'll shut up now for a minute. Matt, jump in here.
Yeah, you're a guy. I want to go back to my thought about context. And again, I'm looking at, I mean, look, there's plenty of context on the pro side too. Like, the things that are going on in these guys' lives, like, if you're just looking at the numbers, like, guy goes through a tailspin for a month, like, you don't know what's going on. You don't know if there's an underlying injury. You don't know if he's having trouble sleeping. Like, I remember, what was it, Mike Napoli, when the Red Sox won the World Series, you know, beat the Tigers in the ALCS, and then, I'm getting old, I think it's the Cardinals. I think they beat the Cardinals that year. But, like, he had sleep apnea, and it was like, when he fixed the sleep apnea problem, then he was able to sleep better, and that led to a jump in performance. So, like, there's so much context around these players, and especially at the amateur level. Now, I want to pull something up, because I had this conversation yesterday with a mutual friend of ours, in regards to what are the indicators for future success for an amateur player? Athleticism being something that we discussed and agreed upon, but also makeup, right? But I took it a step further, and I recently started reading the fourth book by my favorite author, Adam Grant. I don't know. Are you familiar with Adam Grant?
I am not.
Adam Grant is, it's organizational psychology. All right. I love organizational psychology. I think anything with psychology or economics is fascinating to read. And I think that if you apply it properly, it all fits in the conversation of baseball. But yeah, Hidden Potential by Adam Grant just came out a couple weeks ago. I got the first copy off the press. Can't confirm that. But there was a really interesting thing in here. And the reason why like I bring this up in terms of context is like, okay, you're looking at, let's use my favorite example and everything. Brendan Donovan, right? Seventh rounder out of South Alabama. Like, was there anything in his Cape performance? Was there anything in his time at South Alabama that suggested he should have gone higher than the seventh round? I don't think so. I'm pretty familiar with it. Like, he went to the Cape. He was a temp player in Hyannis. He hit under 200. Like, South Alabama, he was, you know, like a nice player, but he wasn't like hitting like 450, whatever. But there are underlying character traits, I think, that when he got into pro ball, like, accelerated him. All right. So, like, that's the content. And this is where, you know, I'm getting more into the like the scouting side and the importance of scouting. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, you know, the analytics. But like, okay, let's go to Hidden Potential by Adam Grant. And there was this really interesting study that was done in the 1980s in Tennessee. There were 11,000 students between kindergarten and third grade that were randomly assigned classrooms in lower income schools. So this study was done by Raj R-A-J Chetty. Chetty, who's like a world-renowned, I think, economist. Anyway, Raj Chetty does the study, and he finds that more experienced kindergarten teachers, the kids who had more experienced kindergarten teachers had greater future earnings as adults. It wasn't just like, oh, like this is like, it was like overwhelmingly, like by the age of 25, if you had a more experienced kindergarten teacher, you had, you know, on average over $1,000 more average earnings per year. Then he does a follow-up study and he looks at students in the fourth and eighth grade from the same populations. And he has their fourth and eighth grade teachers rate them on the following subjective traits: proactivity, how pro-social they are, how disciplined they are, and how determined they are. And what they found was that the more the students that were rated higher by their fourth and eighth grade teachers in those four things subjectively had more experienced kindergarten teachers. Okay, so now they're looking at it and they're looking at adult income based on fourth grade ratings of their teachers. In those subjective qualities, proactivity, pro-social, discipline, and determination, those students were 2.4 times more, earned more than comparing that to math and reading performance on standardized tests. All right, so I'm going to try and like bring this whole thing back. The more experienced the kindergarten teacher was, the more likely they were to score higher on subjective proactivity, pro-social, discipline, determined, which ultimately indicated later on in life much higher earnings and success, as opposed to when they looked at standardized test scores at a young age, that was less deterministic of future earnings. Okay, so all of that to say, if that applies to real world earnings, why can't that apply to baseball earnings? So, Jeff, I don't know if you followed all that or whoever's listening followed that. I'm going to sum it up this way. If I'm an amateur scout, I need to figure out if, and I'm on a player, I need to figure out who their kindergarten teacher was and how much experience they had.
Now, I wonder if we did a similar study with baseball, you know, and how early coaching could impact that. You know, we'll go back in 5-6 years and see all these really successful players from Rice Academy, and we'll know, Matt, we'll know what that came down to. No, I think that's interesting, right? And you know, there's a lot of ways to sort of dig in on players. You got to understand, like you said, the off the field stuff, the makeup stuff. And it's not so much even the off the field stuff. And I don't know if we talked about this on air or if it was an off air conversation between the two of us, but I think there's different buckets of makeup. Like you have your on field makeup guys, like your Tommy Pham, you have a Lourdes Gurriel, who's really good. He's a top step guy. He's keeping people loose in the clubhouse. And then you have your guy who's a good citizen off the field. Sometimes they're all three. Sometimes they're two out of three. Sometimes they're one out of the three. But, you know, I think there's different buckets in how that all breaks down. And there's obviously, particularly on the prep side, there's more work that needs to be done on that sort of thing to understand who you're investing in at such a young age with such a huge amount of money, right?
Well, I think that in when you talk about some of those subjective traits that Adam Grant called out that were part of that study, right? Like determination and discipline, right? Like Lourdes Gurriel, Tommy Pham, and the guy who's a good citizen off the field, let's call it Evan Longoria, right? Like he's been around for
a long time. No issues that I know of.
Exactly. Like all three of those guys can present entirely different. But they could all have the underlying traits of discipline and determination, right? And in that book, it further goes on to talk about getting comfortable being uncomfortable and how important that is for learning new things and progressing and accelerating growth in anything. The propensity that a player has for being willing to be uncomfortable. That doesn't have a skin color or a presentation or anything like that. These are like inborn traits where it's like there are examples of this in every demographic, in every capacity in life, every profession, where like this dude was just more disciplined and determined than everybody else and he got successful. Right? Like we were talking about Russ
before. The rapper.
Rapper. Yeah, and you're just and you know, I brought up John Bellion. And I think Russ and John Bellion are both very similar. Like those guys woke up every day and made music every single day. Mm. And then one day, like it started to compound and then it went parabolic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to pull out a crypto term. But like those guys like have inborn character traits, discipline, determination, that ultimately made them really, 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 really good at what they do and then led to like high levels of success, right? And that's where, you know, knowing Brendan personally, like that's where Brendan becomes a big leaguer and has success at the highest level. Extremely 80 grade discipline, right? Mm-hmm. 80 grade determination. So again, these are things that are hard to like. I just threw 80 grades on there, right? Completely subjectively.
Yes.
But that makes sense now reflecting on it. Now I'm not saying like, okay, like, oh, you should have seen that, you know, when he was in high school, or you should have seen that when he was at South Alabama, you should have gone higher than the 7th round. Like, no, but it goes back to the imaginary war and the subject of this podcast, which is like for the people that say like analytics doesn't have its place, or the people that say like, oh, analytics is the end all be all, like,
yeah,
truly a marriage of the two.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that it's funny because the first conversation we ever had an impact on my perspective on this and how things got so skewed to the general public. And if I can bring this up, first time I had you and your partner Sean on, Sean was a consultant for Moneyball, correct?
He was part of some production meetings, yeah.
Okay. If I can't say that, I'll cut this out of the episode.
No, you could say it.
Okay. Yeah. And so he jokingly said to Brad Pitt, Pitt's like, hey, anything else you look for? And he was like, attractive girlfriend, a hot girlfriend. And I can remember Sean said, you know, I was joking with him. I said back to him, well, he was like, what do you mean? And he was like, you're a confident guy, Brad. Like, you ever have an ugly girlfriend? And, you know, Brad Pitt obviously was like, no, of course not, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so Sean then says he doesn't see the movie. He's on a plane flying back to the East Coast or something. 2 years after the movie comes out, it comes on a plane, and he hears that line about the attractive girlfriend thing. And he was like, I just said that as like a throwaway in a meeting. And it's become a rallying cry that analytics people will say when sort of messing with area scouts and that sort of thing. And I feel like the perception of scouts from that movie became so skewed from what it actually is, you know, and how advanced the understanding of analytics is for a lot of scouts that I talk to on both sides of the house, whether it is on the pro side or whether it is on the amateur side, because so many of them, even old school guys that have worked for big clubs that have been there since the early 90s, understand a lot of analytical traits because they've had training in it. It's been a focus. They have a big analytics department. It's become a part of the conversation. So they have to understand it. It's on job training, just like anybody else, you know?
So well, that's radar gun was the original analytics. Huh? The stopwatch was the original analytics.
So it was a radar gun, right?
That's what I'm saying. Right. The radar gun and the stopwatch, like those are objective numbers that you can now compare to other players. Like, so,
and
okay, now we got spin rate. Now we got, you know, vertical attack angle. Now we got all these other things. It's just an evolution of whoever brought the first radar gun out.
Exactly.
Blame them.
I think that
blame him.
Your livelihood and existence and where you've gained prominence in the baseball world is something that was a marriage of the two. Sean wanted a more objective way to rate, at least this is what you've said to me, athleticism. Because it is very subjective from person to person. Some of it is just eye test. This guy looks like an athlete. This guy played three different sports and was good at basketball. He's the Jordan Adams. And maybe they rank that guy as a better athlete than a Johnny DeLuca. And, you know, what you've created is trying to come up with an objective athletic score that can measure these things in a way that translate directly and correlate directly to things like throwing velocity and exit velocity. And there's a ton of value in that. And I think from time to time, I'm sure you'd back this up, I bet this results shock some people just based on what their perception is of a particular player and his athleticism versus what you get from those tests.
Yeah, and like the Loden score isn't supposed to be a definition of athleticism, but I do think that it's a key component of athleticism, which is the motor. And it's an objective measure of the motor, right? So it's, you know, if I'm going out and I'm putting money on a drag race, like, let me see what's under the hood, you know? And like, there's no guarantees that, okay, this guy's got a bigger motor than this guy, and like, I'm going to put my money on the guy with the bigger motor. Well, he might not be able to keep it between the lines, and he might end up flipping, crash and burn. Let's not go down that road, but that's, you know, 8 out of 10 times the guy with the bigger motor is probably going to win in the sprint. Not to get lost, right? But hey, Jeff, go ask anybody. Go ask a parent at flag football practice. Go ask a parent at cheer practice. Go ask a high school football coach in your town. Go ask a, you know, professional hockey coach. Go ask a basketball athletic trainer. Go ask a strength and conditioning coach on the private side somewhere. Go ask any scout. There's no universal definition for athleticism. No. You go ask them individually, they'll all tell you something entirely different. And that's the problem with having a box on your scouting report that says athleticism and having to put a 2080 grade or a 2A grade on it, right? Is there's no universal definition of athleticism. So if we don't define it the same, then the area scout in the Northeast and the area scout in South Florida and the area scout in Southern California are all looking at that box differently. And this is what, you know, Sean conveyed to me. He scouted for 10 years. He was an area guy. He was a regional cross checker. And then he was a national cross checker. And he's like, I'm sitting here and it's like, my area scout in the Northeast is You know, he says this guy's an athlete because he plays three sports, but he's not a star in any of them. And then the guy in the in Southern California is banging on, you know, a certain player, you know, for not being an athlete because he only plays baseball and he doesn't play other sports, right? And it's like their definitions of what an athlete is, like, do those things have any, is there any meat on that bone in terms of like predicting future value of the player or future performance?
Yeah,
and that's where Sean was like, hey, we probably need to find a way to like objectively grade athleticism and see if it's important. Well, turns out 7 years later, we've got a load and score and it's important.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the thing with that too, is it's defining those traits in a way that you can measure. And then, like we said, correlate that back to certain skills. I think that those tests can also, maybe I'm wrong, I haven't looked at the numbers extensively. Obviously, I'm going secondhand off a lot of this, but you're the right guy to talk to about it. Some of the projection is within those numbers. That if you see there's a higher power score than maybe this guy's on-field performance has shown, then you maybe dig into the swing and you're like, there's some things here that I think we can optimize. There might be more power here. He might get a flat 40 grade from a guy watching his games. But we look here, maybe it's more of a current 40, future 50, future 55, because he's capable of hitting higher end exit velocities. And we know the guys that can touch those higher end exit velocities typically develop bigger power at peak, because then it's just a matter of adjusting your swing, et cetera. And that's not easier said than done, of course, but it does happen with these pro guys, especially if they have that athleticism. And I've always looked at athleticism as it's the ability for the body to adjust quicker. That's what I've always seen, even with little kids, right? Your best athlete will pick up something and a couple of cues within 5 minutes versus three practices with a guy who's maybe on the lower spectrum of athleticism, right? Just in terms of their physicality, ability to do it, they have things that they can do, which is more natural. You know, I think that there is still some, probably some subjectiveness to what I just said, for sure. But I do think that it's this underlying current that doesn't get necessarily discussed. And it's funny because it's not something that outside of you and maybe a few other places or styles of testing that can really give an objective number on those sort of traits. So,
well, I do think that there's something that's really important to bring up here, and that's the handoff that occurs at the draft, right? Mm-hmm. So like the amateur scouts scout these players for an entire year leading up to the draft. Draft happens, certain players are selected to your organization and they are handed off to player development. Okay, now once they're handed off to player development, player development's got to have tools to be able to, you know, okay, that maybe there's an unlock here. They got to be able to actually unlock that, right? Like, okay, is there, you know, a tweak we can make to the swing that's going to, you know, unlock something in this guy's offensive game, offensive profile, whatever it is. But again, value of traditional scouting is that they can go out there and they can basically, through an evaluation, be like, okay, you know, maybe there is more in there. Here's an objective number that says that there could potentially be more in there. Let's figure out why he's not realizing that right now. It's almost like a reason to go further, right? Mm-hmm. It's like that. I think that's what objective data does for you as a scout. It's like a reason to ask the next question. It's like, why is this guy, you know, with a 6 or 7 ERA, like, and he's got a really good fastball, you know, like the fastball looks good, but he's not performing. Why? You know what I mean? Like that's never stopped a scout in the past where it's like, okay, well, you know, this guy's throwing 92 and he's got a really good body and he looks athletic. Turns out he is athletic. What's the unlock? Right. And then you could do like a biomechanics, you know, go into like the actual, you know, whether it's a pitcher or a hitter or whatever, what they're doing. And you'd be like, oh, well, he doesn't get into his, you know, he doesn't hinge properly. You know, is that something we can fix? Mm-hmm. Right. Is that something that, like, when we fix that, all of a sudden he's going to go from like sitting 92 to like sitting 95 or 96. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden the secondaries play up. And when the secondaries play up, like, this is a guy, because at 92, like, he was throwing strikes. He was just getting hit. At 96, when all the secondaries go up, this guy's unhittable. right? So I think those are a lot of the things. And that's why you see, and you brought it up earlier, like the Seattle Mariners have done a really good job in the past couple of years of like taking pitchers. And like Brian Wu, I think, is a pretty good example. Bryce Miller is probably another really good example.
And you got like, one in the farm right now, Darren Bowen. That's a really good example.
Darren Bowen. And they just drafted Brody Hopkins from, I think.
Yeah, another one.
Who's a right? great He's got turbo guy. Stuff. Yeah. And go look at his college numbers. Right, his college numbers don't lend to the eye test of being a fifth round draft, but he was right. And they have the tools, and they've identified certain things in those players where they're like, okay, if we can unlock these things, and like the Dodgers do it too. Like Emmett Sheehan's another example. Like Emmett Sheehan didn't have great numbers at Boston College. That said, all right, this guy's going to go start in the big leagues a couple of years after the draft. Well, he did, right? And I think that's the point, right? Of like, okay, let's look at the numbers, and the numbers might point us in the direction of a player that we like initially wrote off.
Yeah.
All right. Let's figure out like why his performance doesn't match what we like in the numbers. And if it's fixable, then you got yourself a gem. Diamond in the rough. That's the chase. That's the chase, Jeff.
100%, man. That's what it's all about. And I've been talking about it for a long time that, you know, if you're able to buy the, to steal a phrase from Bill Parcells, going back to our Patriots conversation, at the beginning of the show, but you know, if he'd always say, you know, if you want me to make the meal, you got to let me shop for the groceries. And I think it's similar where, you know, if you have a great French chef, you should go out and buy the ingredients to make a great French meal, you know, give this player development team the traits that they can develop into good players. And I think that, understanding, you know, how things work and the strengths of your organization when a player is inside of that organization is a huge advantage for teams like the Mariners, the Dodgers, the Rays. I think the Rangers have gotten better at this as well. And the Braves, there's others as well. But I think that that's where, you know, the actual magic happens, is where everything does come together and work in accordance. And you bring a player in and he's able to exceed expectations that he had as an amateur.
Yeah. Last thing. And then I know you got to go here. But I just think that like, again, as, if you're a fan listening to this and you're wondering, you're going back in time and you're like, okay, well, why didn't, you know, my team select Jordan Walker? Jordan Walker went somewhere in the 20s, I think, or like Mike Trout or Aaron Judge.
20th overall.
Like there's a good chance that like maybe your team didn't have the environment to develop that player into what they became. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's a really important discussion. It's not to say that like your team's player development isn't great, but they might be really good at something else and they're looking for a different type of player. And that happens every single year. There will be good players in every single draft that are selected further down the board than they should have that will go to the right fit and they'll develop into all-stars, right? Like that's just going to happen. But that's not to say that if they were selected earlier, they would have became the same player, because maybe it wouldn't have been the right developmental fit. There's so much to it, Jeff.
And it was 21. Garrett Mitchell actually went at 20, who's a really interesting discussion. We could probably go on for 10 minutes between Jordan Walker and Garrett Mitchell and how they were perceived as athletes and athleticism and what tools and traits actually translated to major league success. I'm not writing off Garrett Mitchell, though. He did start the year pretty good. Ended up hurt again, unfortunately.
Just needs to stay healthy.
Needs to stay healthy and consistently lift the ball, which it looked like he was learning to do. But I hope this was an enlightening discussion for those out there, whether you're a baseball fan, a prospect hound, you know, a fantasy manager, doing dynasty stuff in the offseason. I think it's valuable to take in as much information as possible and try to look at sources that use different processes to get information. You know, look at your robo scouts and the other, you know, systems that are out there that are similar to robo scout. There's a few really, really good ones that are out there. Look at the scouting reports on Baseball America or Baseball Prospectus or different places so you can get a more robust feel. I'm always somebody that's subscribed to a lot of different websites and taking in as much information as I can, and then try to chat with smart people around me that know the game and taking information like that. I think that's the great thing about baseball. It's the thing I enjoy the most, learning different perspectives, getting different ideas about the game, and growing my perspective and my my viewpoint of the game and the things that I'm seeing when I'm at the field or watching a game on TV or looking at the numbers.
Yeah, Jeff, let's slam the book shut on the imaginary war. It's not a salad. The ingredients aren't separated. You can't pick out the onions. It's a soup. All right. Analytics and the subjective evaluation of players is all mixed together in such a way at this point where you can't decide, you can't pull anything out. It's just,
no,
you're married.
If you miss one step, man, it's just not going to be the same soup. Going to be too watery. It's not going to have that flavor, you know? But that has been the 90th percentile. Thanks for tuning in for another week. For Jeff, for Matt, this was the Imaginary War.